Okay, it is recording.
Good morning, Chris. My name is Marilyn Leaf. I came to New Milford as a bride in 1953. And we lived on South Main Street because rents were very difficult to find, and we found that there was an 11-room, fully furnished house available for $75 a month.
That's amazing.
We could only be there for 5 months because the family was in Florida. So we proceeded to enjoy this particular home. And because I did not drive, I was able to walk into town where I could buy my groceries at the First National Grocery Store, which is located today where the post office is. I could go onto Railroad Street and there was an A&P. And an IGA store. I could shop at five different places where I could buy clothing. For example, there was Barton's Department Store on Main Street. There was Golden's Department Store, which had men's clothing, children's clothing, and a wonderful, wonderful, friendly atmosphere. I can remember a story that Merrill Golden told me where his father would allow people who came in to buy clothing for Christmas to put away. If it was cold, he would say to them, take the coat home, pay me when you can, you need this coat now. And there was also Kramer's, and there was a Army and Navy store, and there was a children's store. So New Milford was a very friendly town to live in.
A vibrant town from the sounds of it.
There was a train that could take you to New York, and that train was available until 1970. Eventually, we bought a home on what is called Route 202 today, but the section we bought in was called Park Lane. We had a house that was a six-room ranch house on an acre of land that we bought for $13,000, which is incredible today. Mm-hmm. And we raised our three daughters, who were all born in New Milford at the New Milford Hospital. And there was a Dr. Ireland, very, very fine doctor, who was available in town. And then there was Dr. Noah Barish, who was a pediatrician. Do you want me to... excuse me, Chris, would you like me to just continue?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm just letting you talk, but I guess, yeah, if you, I have questions, but if you want to keep going, keep on going. It's fine.
Well, I just thought I would tell you what was happening at this particular time. My husband worked for an electrical firm called the Berkshire Transformer Company. He was an electrical engineer who had graduated from Cornell and had finished his education on the GI Bill. He had been in the Navy in World War II. And both my husband and myself were from Bridgeport, Connecticut. The firm, which was located in New Milford, eventually moved to Kent. And our three daughters, all of whom, as I said, grew up in New Milford, graduated from New Milford High School, went on to higher education at schools like the University of Connecticut and New York School and Hartford. And today, all of my three daughters are married to New Yorkers, so all of my grandchildren are New Yorkers. I myself had had a basic education at the University of Connecticut, but once my children were older, I went back to school at Westcon to get a teaching certification, and so I then went on to have a position at Litchfield Junior High and High School in teaching United States history.
Did you have any interest in teaching in New Milford?
I was offered a job in New Milford, but my middle daughter at that time was about to go into high school, and she seemed very upset when she heard that her mother would be in the hall. And so I accepted the position in Litchfield, which turned out to be to my advantage.
So you had said that you'd come here because of your husband's job.
Correct.
Was there, I mean, you could have settled around New Milford, I guess. Was there something that attracted you to New Milford, or was it just the economic sort of aspects of it?
I will tell you that my husband thought we should live in Newtown because it would be halfway between Bridgeport, and his sister lived in Danbury, and he thought I would be happier there. But once I saw New Milford, I thought it was the most beautiful place I'd ever been to.
Why?
Many people don't remember Route 7 when it was all farmland. One of the first dinners I ever had was at a country restaurant in Brookfield, where there were swans swimming in the country tavern, or the country, I'm not quite sure of the name, but it was so beautiful, and the whole area was beautiful.
Right.
So I loved it. And then even our first home, we had a very nice neighbor, the Carlson family. Russ Carlson was the first selectman of New Milford, and he and his wife were wonderful to my family. And so I was very happy here. Eventually, we were able to buy an acre of land on Canterbury Road, where we built a home. And I'm still in that home today.
No, you keep saying was beautiful. I mean, how do you think the community has changed?
Well, of course, Route 7 is not as beautiful as it was.
Yeah.
But the area still offers a great deal of charm. I love the fact that the lake is there, and Lake Warramug is not far away. I have very personal friends in Litchfield, and I'm still active in the League of Women Voters, which is located out of Litchfield. So, and I can still get into the city when I want to, but I take the train from Harlem Valley, the Harlem Valley train.
Right.
So, it is still difficult, because when one of my daughters was at the University of in New York, she could come up by bus, even though there was no longer a train. Now we no longer have a bus.
I know.
So that is what I feel sad about. But I still love the community and the friends that I made, and being able to volunteer at the New Milford Library, and having Chris Fisher's mother, Valerie Fisher, is one of my close friends, and other close friends that I've made in the years that I've been able to stay here, despite the fact that my husband passed away now 20 years ago.
Right.
So I've been very happy in New Milford.
And really, it's funny, because You mentioned things that parts of the community that I guess you're still attached to, that are older parts, like parts of the community that you've always been involved with here. And I guess, do you think there's still that community that's growing in New Milford, that sense of community? I guess not the community, but the sense of community.
It depends on the individual. In other words, there are still organizations that you can become part of. For example, I've been a member of Temple Sholem since its beginning. I'm still an active member there. I work with some of the children coming through the religious school. I keep in touch with friends that I made when I was teaching in Litchfield. So as an individual, you have to find things that you feel connected to.
Mm-hmm.
And then you will find similar people who are also connected to the same events.
I think it's so easy now. We have all these artificial communities that we think we belong to, you know, Facebook, Twitter, whatever. And now you have to actively seek real community. And that's what this project is really about, proving and showing to people that the community is still there. It's still very much there. You had mentioned the temple, and I haven't really had anyone talk about it. So you've been there since the beginning. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, it's my pleasure. In the late 1950s, almost 1960s, there was a community in New Milford whose children were going to Danbury, because the temple in Danbury existed, even though there was still a small Jewish community in New Milford. And our own daughter, who at that point was almost 5 years old, we had enrolled in Danbury. However, there was a meeting held in the fall of 1959, in which there was a notice sent out asking if people were interested in starting something in New Milford. As a result of that meeting, Merrill Golden, Dr. Noah Barish, and my husband gained positions. Dr. Barish was acting president, Merrill Golden was acting treasurer, and my husband was going to be acting secretary. And so they found that the Reformed movement offered the membership at that time, which was very small, only 35 families, a flexibility. And the Congregational Church offered us a place where we could meet and rent a facility. And so for 11 years, until we had enough membership and money to build something on Route 7, we went every Friday night to the First Congregational Church, where a Mr. Herman Schellenberg, a wonderful gentleman, would greet us every Friday night. And my own children thought, he must be a member of the temple because he's there every Friday night. And he was so friendly, as well as Reverend Eyre. So these were people who welcomed us. It was a very welcoming time. You know, the 1960s was a very ecumenical time in our country. The Catholic Church had a Pope, John the 23rd, I believe, who also was reaching out his hand. And so there was this feeling that eventually we could all get along very well, because we would all make an attempt to understand each other.
Yeah.
So it was a very life-affirming time. And unfortunately, today we see it much differently.
I hope you don't mind me asking this, but David Brenner, I've spoken to him a few times, and when he moved up here, his family faced a little bit of... There is a little bit of negativity toward them because they were Jewish. Did you experience anything like that?
No, if anything, it was just the opposite.
Yeah.
It was, as I said, our welcoming was with the Carlson family, which, as I said, were next door to me. They couldn't have been nicer. When I went to the hospital to have my other children, my children would go down and stay at their house. Mr. Carlson took my daughter Shelley to Hartford to meet the governor at that time. I mean, I cannot tell you how welcoming we felt in this community. So I did not feel it. In fact, I had no personal experience, which unfortunately my daughters had. So one of my friends once said, you've had a very sheltered life. I said, I never thought of it that way.
Right. Can you speak to some of the issues that your daughters had?
My daughter Linda had a very strong experience when she was in high school. She was the secretary of her class, and she was collecting money one day when one of the students said, "Why is it that you people are always involved in money and collecting money?" Well, my daughter Linda is a fighter, and she no sooner came home and collected as much information she could on the history of anti-Semitism and gave a lecture in her classroom.
Good for her.
So she stood up when she felt that she was being challenged.
Good for her.
And I've heard other stories from other people, but I can tell you, except for one experience that I had when I was teaching in Litchfield, there was nothing that I felt humiliated me or challenged
me.
I usually found people who wanted to know more about me and know more about my background.
Right, because we're all people, right? I mean, that's the thing. I had a question I was going to ask you, and I really should start writing these down. You moved from Bridgeport.
Correct.
Was it a hard transition moving from a city to a smaller town for you?
Well, I had already gone to the University of Connecticut, so mm-hmm. I was, the only difference I found was that I could take a bus and go many places by bus.
Right.
But once I was in New Milford, I had to learn how to drive, mm-hmm. and it almost created a divorce, because my husband was trying to teach me, and I was either, my foot was too heavy, or I wasn't paying attention, and so I eventually went to a driving school in Danbury to get my license. So that was my experience, and once I learned to drive, I had the freedom to go where I wanted.
What year did you move here? I'm sorry.
1953.
So the flood of 55, tell me your experiences about that.
Oh, that's very interesting.
Oh, one moment, please. Sure. We're going to pause for a second.
Okay. I will tell you a very... 55.
Okay, so it is recording now.
Okay.
And we're back with Marilyn Lee.
In 1955, the summer of 1955, my daughter was only 2 years old, and our well ran dry. You can't imagine how difficult it is when you have a small child and you have no water. I was very fortunate to have the Carlson family, who allowed me to fill up buckets of water every day and take it to our home. We decided we had to do something. We must either put in a new well or dig the well deeper. So we were advised to call in the divining rod people. So the first divining rod people that came to our home, the first man, took us around the property, and at one corner, far away from where our well was, the rod went definitely down. My husband, being a very practical person, said, let's call in another person just to see where his rod goes down. So we went to another company. They found that that spot was not as good as another spot where the rod went up in the air. After thinking it through, we decided we knew there was water in this spot, so we'll call in the well diggers to go deeper in that spot. The day they came and began to dig was the day of the beginning of the fall of the rainfall in 1955 that came in such a deluge that it literally was buckets and sheets of water that came down so ferociously that you could not leave New Milford for over a week. In Washington, Connecticut, people were swept away. There were deaths. And in other parts of Connecticut, they had to rebuild a lot of structures. But for the Leaf family, our well filled in. And for the next 10 years that we lived in that house, we never had problems with water, and the well lived. The downside for the Leaf family was that it cost us $500, and that was the only year that we were audited by the IRS, and I had to go to Danbury with all sheets of paper, and we thought that was something we could take off on our income tax, but we were told, no, that was an act of God, and we couldn't take off the $500. And that, to me, is the story of the 55 flood that will remain in my memory back a long, long time.
See, and that's what's so special about this project is it's about perspective, right? We all have experienced this town differently. I've said this time and time again to people who have come here that New Milford is really an agglomeration of villages with very distinctive communities. You said you lived in Park Lane. I lived in Northville. I grew up in Mariel. I always said growing up, I grew up in Mariel. But what unites New Milford is, in the sense of community, is the center of town, right? I mean, this is the glue, the civic organizations that really unite this town.
The jewel of our community is this library.
And just about
they
that.
Must keep this library. And if you look at one side of the green, you'll see that a lot of the original stores are gone. Mm-hmm. But this side is the way it has always been for well over, I would say, almost 100 years. So we can thank a lot of concern in this country. So probably the big asset for all of us is when they destroyed Pennsylvania Station in New York, mm-hmm. and they began to realize that losing some of these old structures, where you were losing your soul.
Yes, absolutely. So how I met you actually is that you were volunteering at the library through my mom. And
correct.
Speak to the library a little bit, I guess. Like how memories, anything really.
Well, when I first retired from teaching was the year that I knew that I had to have something. And so I began to volunteer at the library. And at that time, I was Carl's assistant. He was the, at that time we were going through the vertical file. And there was no, you know, you didn't have things on the computer and you mm-hmm. still had a card catalog. And it was that very year when my husband passed away that Sue Ford said they were looking for somebody part-time in the junior room. Did I know anybody? And I said, yes, me. And so for almost 7 years, I did part-time work at the New Milford Library. But I also did a little volunteering too. And when that position dried up, I stayed on in a volunteer position. But it gave me friends in the library that I wouldn't have had it not been for coming on a regular basis, and a wonderful woman by the name of Valerie Fisher, who really took me into her home at a time when I think I would have been very, very lonely. And the Fisher family embraced me, and so I felt very fortunate that I had their friendship.
So, it's really community that sustains us. I mean, I think that's really the key.
because it's very hard. We're always alone, you know, as an individual, you are alone. But you have to remember that other people may need you as much as you need them.
I agree. I probably couldn't have said it any better. So you came and you worked at the library, and you've seen it change. You've seen people come and go. I guess a final thought that I've been sort of tweaking as I speak with everyone is, what do you hope for this community? What do you hope for New Milford?
I think you want it to keep a community feeling, and it's out there, but it always needs new people to come into these organizations and give it new life and new energy. So I think the library has tried to do that. And I know it's always a struggle because you need the money coming from the town. And I noticed yesterday, to my complete embarrassment, that our budget was defeated, but I did not vote. I forgot completely about voting. And when I opened the paper this morning and I saw that it lost by 18 votes, I said, but at least if I had voted, it would have lost by 17 votes. But it's, again, a reminder that we must participate in the community if we want it to keep that flavor.
Right. And that's I think you're speaking to something much larger, too. I mean, for this system, this great system that we have, we all need to participate and be conscious of what we're doing.
Absolutely.
Politics in town. I mean, so you've seen the transition from a first electman to a mayor. You've seen the introduction of zoning. How do you view politics in New Milford?
Well,
this is a loaded question.
I always felt that in the 1950s, when I came here, there were things that could have happened that might have controlled some of the things. For example, I used to go to a town meeting where the zoning issue came up, and it was always defeated by people who owned property, and the idea was, nobody is going to tell me what to do with my property. And as a result, one of the big landowners on Route 7 sold his property and promptly moved to Virginia. So I know that things could have been put in place that might have controlled some of the sprawl that we see.
Yeah.
So we always seem to be working on hindsight. We've had good mayors. We've had good first selectmen. I do think that perhaps the two-year term is too short for our mayor. It's the same first selectman type of a term. So it would seem we should have a longer term. Now we have a new mayor.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's trying very hard to do things that will help the community.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he needs help. So I think it's important for people. And I'm a little ashamed of myself that I did not vote yesterday. I was so wrapped up in a friend that I hadn't seen in a long time and who didn't look well, that it kind of colored my thought processes as to what I was responsible for. That voters, we are responsible for this community, just like we're responsible for the nation.
Uh-huh.
What worries me today is that I am still receiving two newspapers, and I try to open up my mind to other things other than what concerns me. But on the other hand, I feel that sometimes people are limiting their ability to understand what is happening by just going online or going on Facebook or anything that is only giving you what you, in other words, it's reflecting your own thoughts, mm-hmm. rather than exposing you to other ideas.
Right. You just touched on this whole idea that's very, very important to me. Very important to me. This idea of stewardship. We're all stewards in our community. Do you think that there's sort of a disconnect from that now?
Well, the disconnect is usually the fault of the individual.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, what can the community do to bring out those individuals? I always thought New Milford did a pretty good job. For example, every year, right before the duck race out on, I have a friend, Kathy Sederlin, who always sells me a pass so that I have a duck out there.
Actually, Kathy just came to talk to us. Keep going. So she keeps on selling you a pass, or buying, giving you a pass.
Correct.
So,
but then again, you see, it's a two-way street. The right. community has to do more to reach out to the community, but on the other hand, individuals in the community have to participate.
Right.
Now, one of the reasons I believe we have a new mayor is that the closing of the John Pettibone School became a major issue in this community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. And I think it's very easy, and this is trying to stay fairly unpolitical about what happened, but I think it's very easy with our, there is no limit on mayoral terms, and so because of that, mayors can become very insular. It doesn't really matter what happens outside of their office. And I think it's an interesting problem that New Milford is probably going to have to deal with at some point in time. And I think you're probably right. I think it's a remnant from having a first selectman.
Yes.
So I don't, do you have anything else you want to add?
I can't think of anything, Chris. I think this is a very good idea. I think it's a very good project. I wish my neighbor, Merrill Golden, who passed away when he was 92, was still alive, because he was born in New Milford at the turn of the century, and he had so many wonderful stories. I believe he recorded a lot of these memories that might be at the senior center. He went to a breakfast at one time and told many of these stories, these old stories about New Milford, the flood, not only the 55 flood, but the fire that destroyed so much of the Main Street area.
Mm-hmm.
So his memories are there.
Do you know how he ended up in New Milford? I know this is a little...
Well, yes, that story I know because he told me. Mm-hmm. His father was a very, very intelligent man, was passing through the town by train. When he stopped off here, he thought, this is going to be a good place for a business, that because you've got the hub, and people came from the whole surrounding areas. And because his father spoke five languages, and there were many immigrants at that time who worked in the community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we did have the iron mines, and we had various things that still existed. He became very friendly with the people who ran the town. So when his children were all born, he had four sons, one daughter, and they were all very, very well educated.
Mm-hmm.
Merrill and his brother ran the store, but the other brothers became doctors. One was a physician in Hartford, and his other brother, who lived in Stamford, was a pathologist in the Stamford Hospital. But in Merrill used to tell the story, in 1931, his brother was a valedictorian at New Milford High School. So they were always very proud of their heritage. And they had one daughter, Ruthie, I believe, who is still alive. She is 92 years old. And his nephew, Joe Golden, still lives in Danbury.
Oh, wow.
And you might get in touch with him.
Yeah.
And I bet Ruth would have some interesting stories.
She would too.
I used to kid Merrill that people will wonder if Ruthie is adopted. And he would kid me back by saying, why? And I said, well, she doesn't want people to know her age. And whenever anybody asks you, how old is Ruthie? You always say, nobody knows.
Well, I think we'll stop there. And I really appreciate it. Thank you.
My pleasure. My pleasure.